This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It being Friday, what happened this week? Why? And where do we go from here? I don't know, by the way, is a perfectly acceptable answer to that last question. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Friday today, the 17th of April. Week like five-ish, I think, of this economy going into cold storage. Good as always to have you along, everybody. We are going to jump right in with the week that was, because once again, it was a doozy. Neela Richardson is at Edward Jones. Lynette Lopez is at Business Insider. Hey, everybody.
Hi, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with you, and I want to go back a couple of days to this report from the International Monetary Fund saying the global economy was going to shrink this year by 3%. And then in that same report, they said, you know, we're looking at a rebound in 2021. And I want to know if you, as the trained economist on this radio show today, buy that.
That's a hard one. I think when we looked at 2020, we expected a global rebound for the year in January. We saw that the trade agreement, remember that, of last year, that was the biggest crisis we had in 2019. The trade agreement between the U.S. and China would be a tailwind for global growth more broadly. And so what the World Bank is basically saying is that COVID-19 just puts the world on pause for a year, and it restarts in 2021. I do think that the world looks better in 2021, but I think it's going to be a hard lift to get to a 3% GDP growth globally in 2021, given everything that's going down right now.
Right. Right. We'll just note here the varying sound quality here, this being live radio, but that we're all doing from our living rooms. Lynette, let me ask you to turn to China here for a second. We're doing some China in the rest of the program, but we have to point out that what had been one of the fastest growing economies in the world shrank last quarter by almost 7%. It's pretty clear we're not going to get them, the Chinese, to help drive us out of this lockdown, right?
Not only that, but the Chinese were counting on us to help them to get their economy back on track. And since it's still an export-based economy, now the Chinese are worried because we're not going to be buying as many of their goods. So the whole world is stuck in a funk. Nobody's going to be the healthy guy that drags everybody through this. We're all going down together. And it's very interesting that, to me, that we're in a moment where world leaders can't really seem to coalesce around anything, but we need each other more than ever. And we need each other to be stable more than ever to be able to get out of this.
Well, so look, Neela, on that thought of us needing each other more than ever, let's apply that domestically here for a second. And the idea that Congress now, we've exhausted that $350 billion in the Small Business Administration loan program. The Senate and the House are out on recess and cannot come to terms on what to do next. If you're an American business person, what are you planning for? Because the uncertainty, it seems, gets worse every day in this crisis.
Right. But still, you have to plan and persist, right? So luckily, we have another outlet, which is the Fed. The Federal Reserve has, I thought they were holding meetings in Chair Powell's garage because they were throwing out so many kitchen sinks at this problem. They have done everything thinkable, and probably some things that I haven't thought about, to arrest this problem and really to make sure that credit flows to households and consumers around Congress and around leveraging some of the congressional moves as well. And let's remember that banks are actually going to be part of the solution here instead of the problem as they were in 2008. Bank balance sheets are very strong, very solid after 10 years of regulation. So there is some help still flowing, even if Congress is on recess for right now.
Lynette, let me ask you, this is in a way, it's a scary question. It's a little bit cynical, but it's something that's been on my mind. So, yes, the Fed is going great guns and doing what it can. Part of what it's able to do is because it has the backing of the Treasury and some approvals by the Congress. Do you suppose, though, that it's possible that this crisis accelerates so quickly as Congress can't come to terms that it exceeds the capacity of the American government to fix?
Well, it depends on how behind Americans themselves get on debt payments and things like that. And it depends on the hole that the federal government leads the states in. That debate that you're talking about in Washington going on right now is that Republicans want to send money to the Small Business Administration program that's been helping small businesses with their payroll. And at the same time, Democrats want to send money to the states and to the hospitals that have been dealing with this problem on the front lines. Republicans don't want to do it. They don't want to send emergency funds to the states and the hospitals, which is, I just don't understand, has to be an ideological thing. If we're going to get ideological here, we're all going to be in big trouble because this is a problem that is going to require creative thinking outside any problem that that has faced the American people. And it's going to require us to think about the economy in two different stages. One is, what is the post-lockdown, pre-vaccine coronavirus economy going to look like? And it's going to be one where we have to shift workers to contract tracing. We're going to have to ramp up testing, teach people how to do that. It's going to be a completely different economy. And then we have to think of how to transition the economy from that economy into a post-vaccine economy, which is an attempt to really, truly normalize our world. And no ideology belongs in any of that discussion, because if you don't increase the size of the federal government or state governments or any governments, you can't get from the pre-vaccine phase to the post-vaccine phase. It's just...
Neela, real quick, and I mean like 30 seconds, Neela. It is fundamentally a discussion, once again, of the role of government in this economy, right?
The role of government right now is to prime the pump, right? We know that things are going to get worse before they get better. We just started the social containment in late March. We're seeing the effects of that hit Americans now. But eventually it will get better, because we're also seeing progress in testing and innovations in vaccines and treatment. Yeah. It's a hard road till then. But look what already the American people have done: shut down an economy voluntarily to attack head on a health crisis that was projected just a few short weeks ago to be much worse than it is already turning out to be. And so in that sense, there is hope that we have enough ingenuity among us all to combat this crisis and to get through it together.
We'll end on the up note. Neela Richardson at Edward Jones, Lynette Lopez with the Here Here at Business Insider. Thanks, you two. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Cheers, Kai.
Stay safe. Wash your hands. On Wall Street this Friday, look, there is a certain detachment from reality going on here. That's about all I can say. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. It's possible, likely perhaps, but we don't really know yet, that this pandemic is going to slow or maybe completely reverse some big picture economic trends, among them globalization itself. There's been pressure in this country to bring manufacturing back, as you know, especially in light of our shortages of medical supplies. And today, a survey of multinational companies in China found pressure to decouple China and its economic orbit, separated from, say, the U.S. and Western Europe. Marketplace's Scott Tong reports on deglobalization.
We all know where iPhones come from. Now we're finding out about raw materials for medicines and health safety gear.
One of the learnings from the public's point of view is that in many ways, all roads go back to China.
Benjamin Schobert is a global health scholar at the National Bureau of Asian Research, a think tank. In this pandemic, medical essentials have gone in short supply here because foreign factories shut down due to the virus, or they sold goods to other countries or to their own citizens.
Given the political realities, the public health realities, now we're asking ourselves this question of how much of this manufacturing infrastructure are we comfortable having be dependent on China?
If this sounds familiar, there's been supply chain nervousness in other American sectors, tech, telecom, defense, before the pandemic. And on China's side, it has cut investments in the U.S., says Dan Rosen at the Rhodium Group Consultancy.
China's government, nervous about capital outflows as a sign of financial risk and instability, caused them to close their own door on their own companies going abroad.
It's called decoupling, shorthand for a potentially deglobalizing world. And Rosen expects more calls to bring factories home. But that could be expensive, and there could be shortages of skilled labor in the U.S. So he's suggesting less drastic changes.
Smarter stockpiling, diversification of global supply chain activity so that they're not all concentrated just in one country, are additional strategies that need to be thought through.
The thing is, raising drawbridges could backfire. Since March, more than 30 medical export bans have been imposed around the world. Economic historian Doug Irwin at Dartmouth says in the past, these barriers brought retaliation, which could well happen again, say with face masks.
With masks, you probably heard, 3M is doing its best to ramp up production as fast as possible, but it's also dependent on imports from Canada of the fibers that go into the masks.
So if the U.S. says no masks for you and Canada says no fiber for you, we all lose. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The biggest story in this economic crisis so far, and look, it's still early, which I know sounds ridiculous to say, but I would suggest the biggest story to date has been the very sudden and very big unemployment crisis. More than 22 million people have filed initial benefits claims in the past month or so, and more than a million of those people are in the state of Texas, where the unemployment program, like everywhere else in the country, is completely overwhelmed. To get a feel for what it's like on the ground, we've called Ed Serna. He is the executive director of the Texas Workforce Commission. Mr. Serna, welcome to the program, sir.
Thank you very much for having me.
Tell me, would you, what it's been like in the belly of the labor force beast these past 3-4 weeks, huh?
It's been something incredible. This is the sixth state agency that I've worked at in Texas state government in about 34 years. Nothing has been as challenging, as nerve-wracking, as stressful as this. The staff here are doing everything they can, and it seems like wave after wave after wave keep coming, and we just keep addressing it. So it is completely different.
Yeah, I know you're adding staff and adding hours. You're going, 12 hours a day, I think, every day of the week. How are your people holding up?
They're holding up well. They know that they're what they're doing is providing a lifeline, not just money, but a lifeline to what we consider to be our neighbors, our fellow Texans. I should knock on wood, but I haven't had any resignations. I haven't had any folks emailing me or calling to complain. And my email is available to all 4,000 staff that we have over here. So.
As you sit there and you are inundated with calls and hits on the website, what's the workflow? I mean, somebody calls, they get through, and then how quickly can you help them?
If they get through on the telephone, which is still a challenge, and by the way, not only have we added staff, but we have brought on board 3 outside call centers and are bringing on board a 4th. But when you get to one of the people that's answering those phones, they'll take the application. If there's an issue, they'll work through the issue right then and there. And then within a week or so, you'll get a confirmation from us along with a date that says call back and request payment. On that day, you call and request payment, and then within 14 to 21 days, you'll either have a direct deposit or a debit card.
It must kill you to know that for as many people as you lay on and as many extra call centers and computer servers as you start up, there are still people who can't get through.
Yes, sir. That bothers us the most and frustrates us the most because we know we can help people once they get to us. Mm-hmm. And our frustration is the volume just just continues to increase. Yesterday, for example, we received over 2 million calls. We couldn't answer all those calls, obviously, because that's about 61 calls a second. But there were 2 million people calling us. Some of those were repeat calls because, you know, like you and I, or I shouldn't say you, but I know like me, if I get frustrated, I hang up, I call back.
Yep. Yeah.
But it is very frustrating to us. But we're going to do whatever it takes to add resources to computers, people, anything else to get to everybody.
You've been in Texas state government, you said what, like 30-something years, right? Long time.
Yes, sir. Close to 34 years.
You've seen hurricanes. You've seen all kinds of stuff. You ever seen anything like this?
Nothing at all. The thing with this is we had plans in place that address hurricanes and, you know, other disasters, flooding. Yeah. But it was the intensity and the speed and the magnitude that just completely overwhelmed us immediately. As an example, we added 400 lines, telephone lines, incoming telephone lines to what we already had, which is about 1,500. And the day we added them, they immediately got flooded, just immediately inundated. So,
Ed Serna is the executive director of the Texas Workforce Commission. Mr. Serna, thanks for your time, sir. I really appreciate it. And best of luck to you as you do this good work.
Thank you very much. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to visit with you.
Coming up.
This filter's membrane was developed in Massachusetts. The polymers that are used are sourced from a variety of different countries, including China and India.
Global supply chains in a global pandemic. But first, sure, why not? Let's do the numbers. Oh, this sad happy. I honestly didn't expect that. I thought we were past that. Anyway, Dow Industrials up 704 points, 2.9% today, 24,242. That's a lot of twos and fours in there. The NASDAQ up 117 points, 1.3%, ended at 8,650. The S&P 575 points to the good, 2.6%, 28.74. For the week gone by, the Dow improved 2.2%. The NASDAQ up 6.1%. S&P 500 grew 3%. Apple dropped 1.3%. Today, the iPhone maker got downgraded on expectations it would see a 36% decline in shipments of the phones in the third quarter. Chipmaker Qualcomm also downgraded off 0.8%. Bond prices fell. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note rose to 0.64%. Think about that. It rose to 0.64%. You're listening to Marketplace.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Ryssdal. In this new coronavirus normal, things are, well, they're harder, right? I mean, life, yes, just getting things done, but doing business too. And for companies still trying to make things, be they life-saving treatments or maybe just the bags you use for carryout, those companies are facing huge challenges because today's supply chains are long and they are widely distributed indeed. Marketplace's Sabri Benishore has that one.
Millipore Sigma is a life science tools company. They make a lot of equipment, including stuff used to make antibodies and vaccines that might one day help fight coronavirus. Udit Batra is the CEO. Here is how they make one of their products, a type of filter.
This filter's membrane was developed in Massachusetts. It is now cast in Cork, Ireland. The polymers that are used are sourced from a variety of different countries, including China and India. The solvents come from Darmstadt, Germany.
All of that to make one product that is used to make another product.
We rely on a well-functioning global supply chain.
When one small supplier in France was about to shut down because of coronavirus, Batra's company had to step in to get permission for them to keep working. When a plane of components couldn't take off in India because that country was shutting down, they had to get help from the Swiss ambassador and the Indian government.
Yeah, supply chains across industries are going through a lot of disruptions.
Susan Lund is with the McKinsey Global Institute. Breakdowns way up a supply chain are catching some companies by surprise.
Very few companies have good visibility into the suppliers of their suppliers, and then the suppliers of the tier two, and so on.
Manufacturing shutdowns in China that began months ago are just starting to show up in some supply chains now. For some industries, this is kind of the worst possible moment for supply chains to break.
Starting middle of March, we saw huge spikes in sales as consumers were looking for ways to protect themselves and their families.
Callie Vlahakis-Hanks is head of Earth Friendly Products. They make environmentally friendly cleaning supplies. She says, luckily, her company long ago decided to produce locally to lower the carbon footprint of shipping. And that actually saved them.
The way our business is set up right now, we have four manufacturing facilities around the nation.
When one part of the country shut down, others could take over. This is exactly what a lot of manufacturers are now thinking about. It's not all about what's cheapest, but which suppliers are close by, or spread out, or good backups, low risk. Meanwhile, it will take months to iron out and rethink their tattered and frayed global supply chains. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishour for Marketplace.
Okay, back to China as promised. Its economy crashed in the first quarter, as I said, down almost 7% from the same period a year ago, bringing to a screeching halt in your constant expansion dating back to the days when Chairman Mao was still around. No surprise, of course, given the coronavirus state of affairs over there in February and March. And the reality is, though, that while big companies are mostly getting back online, some small businesses didn't survive, and the ones that did are taking things one day at a time. Marketplace's Jennifer Pak has that one from Shanghai.
In Shanghai's southern suburb of Fengxian, cars park all along the main shopping area. Electric bicycles weave past each other, a few dozen shoppers drink bubble tea and browse for shoes and purses. Life is slowly returning to this street. It's called People's Road, but not fast enough for Edward Xie's five clothing shops.
Business was not good in January because people went home for the Lunar New Year. Then February, the shops were closed because of the COVID-19 virus. Sales revenue in March was only a third of what it was in the past.
He says his business selling women's casual wear is losing thousands of dollars a month. He didn't see that coming.
I thought initially business would return to normal after the pandemic was over.
He was so confident that he decided to renew the lease at one of his shops, though he did ask the landlord for a discount.
The landlord was willing to reduce the rent by about 2%, while I wanted a rent cut of 11%.
They couldn't reach an agreement, and Edward says he didn't renew the lease. Looking back, it was a blessing in disguise, he says. Business is nowhere near normal. His lease will run out within days, and the shop will close. Outside the store, a sales announcement plays on a loudspeaker. Everything must go, it says. Get some clothes at rock-bottom prices. The pending store closure also means staff member Xiao Lianhong will be laid off.
It's not easy to find another job at my age. I'm in my mid-40s, too old for a lot of employers.
But she says she understands the boss. Times are tough. According to a survey in February by top Chinese universities Tsinghua and Peking, 85% of smaller firms don't have enough cash to last more than 3 months. And it's starting to show here on People's Road, where one of Edward's shops is located.
So across from his shop, there's like four storefronts that are already closed and shut.
During the coronavirus crisis, he's also had some of his old business contacts reaching out to him.
Every other day since late March, I've received photos of clothing samples from this supplier. Look, I've never responded to him, but he keeps sending me messages.
His four other clothing shops are all bleeding money. There is government help for small businesses, but Edward says none of the measures helps his bottom line. What he needs is customers, like Huang Yinghua. Huang Yinghua says now her apartment complex doesn't restrict how often she can leave. She's shopping here regularly again. To keep his other locations open, Edward has put all the clothes on sale to recover some costs. He's also asked for all his landlords to drop the rent, but they've refused. So now he needs to lay off more workers, but he's not finding it easy.
A couple of my workers offered to split one salary between the two of them so they could both keep working.
It's an offer he readily accepted, he says, and he hopes times will get better.
There's a Chinese saying that spring will come eventually.
He just hopes his business will still be around when it does. In Shanghai, I'm Jennifer Pak for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, a mix of private enterprise and national purpose. And I should probably preface this by saying I'm something of a space geek, so this might appeal to me more than you, but here goes. I got the mic, right? NASA and SpaceX announced today that astronaut launches from the United States are going to start again on May 27th after 9 years of buying rides from the Russians. Two Americans are going to launch on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket for the International Space Station on that date, 27 May, and they'll do it from the Kennedy Space Center. Like I said, I just think that's cool. All right, we got to go. Dow Industrial's up 704 points today, 2.9%. The NASDAQ grew 117 points. That is 1.3%. The S&P 500 up 75 points, 2.6% there. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fargali. Nancy Cassett is the managing director of news. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a good weekend. Get out, get some fresh air if you can. Wash your hands. Stay safe, wear a mask, all that good stuff. All right? This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.